This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, July 17th, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on today's edition of Ozarks, we'll speak with the trumpet player from the renowned jazz group, the Sons of Brazil. The Kansas City band plays nothing but Latin music. They'll be in Northwest Arkansas this weekend.
Plus, in an effort to combat summer learning loss and to keep kiddos occupied during the long summer days, Fayetteville Public Schools has launched a bookmobile. We'll join as it makes a stop on the west side of town. Plus, how a mother turned nesting into a successful business.
But first, the Arkansas Lottery Commission is pursuing some adjustments to its auditing process in an effort to retain some revenue. Numbers released this week show falling lottery revenue for a second consecutive year, resulting in nearly $9 million less in scholarship funds. The lottery's audit and legal committee decided yesterday to further explore procuring new software and hiring one additional full-time position to handle drawings, which they expect will reduce the role of a more costly legislative audit. Director Bishop Woolsey says the moves may be beneficial, but not a solution to declining revenue.
We're talking tens, maybe thousands of dollars, or maybe a couple of hundred thousand dollars, which always, again, good for scholarships, but in the grand scheme of things, when you're talking about millions of dollars, that's not real big. But we're always looking for ways to cut the fat, so to speak.
Any changes to auditing must first be approved by the Lottery Commission itself. Proposals would then have to be passed through the legislature's Lottery Oversight Committee in September.
The long-held practice of end-of-semester exams has the potential to change in Rogers after the school board voted to change policy earlier this week. Robert Moore, the assistant superintendent for secondary education at Robert Rogers Public Schools, says the board's action was simply the repeal of a single policy that had long been on the district's books.
The policy granted seniors in their second semester the ability to not participate in semester exams if they met a certain criteria, didn't miss more than a certain number of school days, and had a certain grade in a class. They did not have to take their final examination. And what the school board did was removed that policy from our policy books at the request of the administration.
Moore says it was the only policy the school had pertaining to semester exams, and that the rule implied that semester exams would be given. By removing the policy, that implication is no longer made, giving teachers freedom to test students in what they feel is an appropriate manner. Moore says the freedom will bring, among other benefits, the potential for more instructional time for teachers and students.
Students are required to attend school, or there's 178 student contact days every year, and just the process of administering semester exams, usually it takes about 3 to 3.5 days per semester to give the exam, and there's typically 2 to 3 days of review prior to that. So we're hopeful that we're going to gain 10 to 12 days of instruction. And for teachers, that means that's more time for them to work with their students and to advance their learning. For students, it gives them more opportunities to participate in class and to have opportunities to learn content and to learn skills that they're going to apply in the different subjects.
He says with the policy change, teachers will be free to choose whether to assess their students' knowledge in a subject through a traditional semester exam, through a comprehensive project, or whether mandated end-of-course exams adequately measure students' comprehension of the subject at hand. Moore also says the decision wasn't taken lightly, and the policy implying the use of semester exams was only removed after school district staff took nearly a year to evaluate the appropriate use of those exams.
Downtown Bentonville Incorporated has named a new interim executive director. Debbie Materi, who served on the organization's board since 2002, has been named to fill the position. She will also fill the role of director of community engagement. Her involvement in Bentonville's downtown began as a small business owner in 1991. She later helped create the Downtown Hometown organization, which has evolved into the current downtown organization.
The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program yesterday announced more than $2 million in grant dispersals to historic preservation projects throughout the state. Among the recipients were several in Benton County, including the Rogers Historical Museum, which received $10,000 for restoration of windows at the city's historic post office. The city of Rogers itself received nearly $13,000 for updating guidelines for administration, training, and design. And Main Street programs in Rogers and Siloam Springs each received a $10,000 downtown revitalization grant for projects benefiting their respective downtown areas.
The Poultry Federation is honoring one department head in the Bumpers College of Agricultural, Food, and Life Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Michael Kidd, director of the Center of Excellence for Poultry Science, is the head of the Department of Poultry Science in the Bumpers College, and he was selected as Industry Leader of the Year by the Federation, which is a tri-state organization representing poultry and egg industries in Arkansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma.
Two Arkansas attorneys are filing a motion in U.S. District Court, seeking a summary judgment in regards to Arkansas's constitutional ban on same-sex marriages. The motion, on behalf of two Arkansas couples, argues the ban deprives the plaintiff's right to marry, and the ban is a discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender. The attorneys are asking U.S. District Judge Christine Baker to decide the case on legal merits without a hearing. Earlier this year, Pulaski County Circuit Judge Chris Piazza overturned the ban. But later, a stay was issued by Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel. The Arkansas Supreme Court will rule on the matter in the future.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals leave home after dropping a 2-0 game to Tulsa last night. The Nats now 2 games out of first place in the Texas League North. Northwest Arkansas begins a 4-game series in Springfield tonight. They'll be back at Arvest Ballpark for a 7-game homestand beginning Monday night.
Forecast this evening calls for cloudy skies with showers likely and thunderstorms possible. Overnight lows around 60 degrees. Tomorrow, Friday, showers likely before noon with chances for afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Highs around 75 degrees. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with lows from 60 in northwest Arkansas, 65 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. University of Arkansas research team is conducting an ongoing investigation into opinions among Arkansas political and business leaders on state energy policy issues. They started in Northwest Arkansas, where there has been a surge of interest in the electrical grid due to a planned 60-mile-long interstate power transmission line extending from western Benton County to eastern Carroll County, much of it going through private property. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich talked with two of the survey scholars.
The UA Social Studies Survey, which assessed local policy elites' opinions on Arkansas energy policy issues, was conducted by political science professor Dr. Gobu Song and two of his graduate students, Environmental Dynamics PhD program candidate John Kester and Rochelle Moyer, who's pursuing a master's in political science.
Our motivation as scholars was to focus on gaining a better understanding of individuals' perceptions of the benefits and risks associated with high-voltage power lines.
Moyer is from Eureka Springs, ground zero for a mobilized effort to block proposed electrical facilities transmission expansion. Compared to nearby states, Arkansas has far fewer high-voltage transmission lines. Survey research was self-funded. Assistance was provided by several chambers of commerce, a municipality, and the Northwest Arkansas Council. The team was able to distribute the survey query and link to 1,400 political and business leaders in the region. Of those, 235 responded. Nearly 17%. They skewed male, educated, middle-aged, and white. Subjects were asked 19 questions. Some regarded Arkansas's energy policy, such as the source and adequacy of energy supplies, cost of various types of energy, and the environmental implication of using energy. This is Dr. Gobu Song.
About 88% of them expressed moderate to strong confidence.
The stated goal of the Arkansas Governor's Commission on Global Warming is to lead the nation in attracting clean and renewable energy industries to this state. The policy plan also calls for promoting energy efficiency and renewable deployment across Arkansas. We have a number of electrical cooperatives in Arkansas, as well as investor-owned utilities, including American Electric Power and Southwestern Electric Power Company, SWEPCO, which operate coal and natural gas fire generating stations, as well as wind farms over in Oklahoma and Kansas for regional and interstate sale. This year, federal regulators called for reduction in coal-based energy with increasing reliance on natural gas, wind, solar, and geothermal. Back to the survey, Northwest Arkansas political business leaders were asked if they were satisfied with overall energy policies regarding sources and adequacy and cost and environmental implications of energy supplies. Dr. Gobu Song.
About 28% of them revealed relatively strong satisfaction, while 45% expressed moderate levels of satisfaction. And about a quarter of them were relatively dissatisfied with current overall energy policies in the state of Arkansas.
Survey subjects turned out to be rather progressive regarding tax credit programs, home energy affordability loans, energy saving goals, conservation, and tapping renewables, but not so keen on property assessed clean energy districts. The majority of respondents were positive that sustainable energy policies would provide better land use opportunities, economic opportunities, and job creation.
They're also concerned about local government administrative capacity and fiscal consideration.
Now, the remainder of the survey addressed high-voltage power line installation. In April of 2013, SWEPCO, a regional electric utility pushed by Southwestern Power Pool, a regional transmission organization, notified more than 1,000 landholders in Benton and Carroll counties that their property could be crossed by one of six possible 345-kilovolt transmission lines. And every mile of the 60-mile-long, 150-foot-wide route, six 160-foot-tall metal towers would be installed. SWEPCO claims the project will stabilize and improve an aging and inadequate North Arkansas and Southern Missouri electric grid. The Arkansas Public Service Commission, which vets public utility projects, would have approved a preferred northern route cutting through both states were it not for massive opposition from residents, politicians, and business owners, mobilized again by the advocacy group Save the Ozarks. They claim the project is not justified, lacks adequate environmental review, and pushes interstate electric transmission corporate interests. Earlier this year, the commission ruled the project was not justified and SWEPCO's application was inadequate. Still, in mid-June, the commission ordered a fresh round of hearings. SWEPCO has since filed a letter requesting the transmission line project be placed on hold for 6 months while it prepares its case. Now, social scientist Rochelle Moyer was careful to say the survey, this new survey, is not specifically about the SWEPCO project, but rather about high-power transmission lines in general.
We sort of took some of the risks that had been communicated in public hearings, and we used those as a starting point to try to measure the risks that people were feeling in regard to this issue.
62% of respondents said that, in general, risks were greater than benefits. But more than half said the power line would bring moderate to high levels of energy stability and reliability. Economic and job benefits, however, skewed lower. Finally, respondents were asked about specific risks.
So decreasing property values were the major risk that was perceived in the survey, followed by environmental degradation. From clear cutting of trees, and then threats to tourism was the third largest perceived risk, followed by pesticide and herbicide use, and then finally negative health impacts due to electromagnetic field emission.
Dr. Gobu Song, Rachel Moyer, and John Kester are expanding their study statewide as the push for transmission facilities also expands in Arkansas. A proposal to build a 750-mile-long, 600-kilovolt power line that would carry wind-generated power from the panhandle of Oklahoma through north-central Arkansas to East Coast consumers is in the works. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Ahead, how a local mother turned nesting and a love for art into a full-blown national business. Lots of support and guts helped.
I got really brave one day, and I just looked up the email address to the head of the company of the Land of Nod, and I sent her an email, and her name's Michelle. And I said, Michelle, it's been a dream of mine to work with your company, and I will pretty much do anything to work with you. Hope I didn't sound too desperate. But within like a week, she replied and said, yes, absolutely, we want to work with you. And I was just floored.
We'll meet the woman behind the animals at Gingerbur in about 25 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Piper Kerman is used to seeing her life dramatized on the Netflix series Orange is the New Black. But what about the real Larry, her partner, Larry Smith?
Sometimes there are exact lines from our lives, and sometimes there are lines that are actually, wow, I wish I wrote that line and said that to Piper, because their writing is great.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Tune in this afternoon at 1 to hear Here and Now on KUAF.
The lazy days of summer have gotten a bit less lazy, or maybe a different kind of lazy, thanks to the Fayetteville Public Schools bookmobile. Mondays in June and July this summer, a large gray SUV with FPS magnets on the side makes 5 stops on the west side of town to allow students the opportunity to check out books to read. The SUV belongs to Sarah Jewell, library specialist at Holt Middle School. She got the idea for the bookmobile from an episode of The Ellen Show, which had showcased an Oklahoma teacher running a similar program. Sarah says that while the Fayetteville Public Library does an excellent job of promoting reading during the summer, not everyone can make it to the library.
As far as those kids I know that will probably stay at home, you know, not go a whole lot of places, you know, maybe their parents just stay home during the day and they need something fun to do, and it's just a good way for us to get in the community. And Fayetteville is just a community that embraces this kind of, you know, this kind of novice thinking, I think.
Reading can be their only outlet during the 2.5 months or so they are away from the classroom. Stacy Wilcox is a third grade teacher at Holcomb Elementary and one of 2 teachers volunteering to pass out books on the day of my visit.
And you think of some of these kiddos and for their families, sometimes summer might turn out to be a little bit harder than it is for the school year, which is not, you know, what us as teachers experience. Our summer is a little more relaxed, but for some of these families, it can be a little more difficult for them not having the school around in that time and all of that. So I think that this experience is just perfect for some of those families that give them that little extra peace during the summertime to keep their academics up while they're at home. So
learning loss is something that many students experience when not in school. Stacy says this is something she sees when kids return to the classroom each August.
It definitely shows up in their reading level and even their motivation. I mean, some of them are excited to get back to school and some of them not so much. So when they can keep in touch with reading and those sorts of things over the summer, it really does make a big difference.
Sarah, the librarian, puts together a selection of books for the kids to choose from each week. She picks the popular genres she knows students will pick on any given day. Books she won't have to push on them, but ones they'll happily grab.
I know that they'll either go to the graphic novel section, or I know that they'll go to the sports section of the nonfiction. And then chapter books are always, you know, they all love the chapter books. So I made sure to get some, you know, girl ones, some boy ones, and some either or.
Her library at Holt has 16,000 books. Here, on a sidewalk in the Lynx at Weddington apartment complex, there are 5 large plastic bins, and she admits it's a very grassroots effort. To keep track of the books as they come and go, she carries a laptop computer with a link to the FPS system. The next week, kids will check the books back in, and they go into a separate bin.
All right, what's your lunch number, sweetheart?
1, 4.
Sarah checks out the books that Shantae Hutton has picked out. She's going into the 6th grade at Holcomb Elementary, and though she lives nearby, her grandmother has driven Shantae and her little brother to the book stop.
Have you enjoyed reading this summer?
Yes.
Yeah, it's is it one of your favorite things to do?
No, not my favorite, but yeah. I'll read them once in a while.
Yeah. When do you like to read?
Whenever I'm bored.
Yeah. What are your favorite things to read?
Like, my favorite things to read are like realistic books and like fiction books and some nonfiction books, not all fiction books. I like to read some nonfiction books too.
What is it that you like about reading the nonfiction books?
Well, I like nonfiction books better because it's true stories and you can learn more than by, and I like fiction books too because they're funny and you can laugh and have fun with them.
Yeah. Which books did you pick out?
I picked out a Dear Dumb Diary book and a Catching Fire book.
Her little brother, Jaquan, has also picked out some books to take home.
I got Henry the Deadly. He's a lizard, and he has lizard problems. And I got Happy Birthday to Bad Kitty, where it's his birthday.
Yeah. Why did you choose those books?
Because I like these books, because this one's funny, and this is actually a new book for me because I never read it.
Yeah, but you've seen it before?
No.
No.
Is it fun to get to come down? I mean, you don't even have to leave your house, really, to get to come pick out new books.
Mm-hmm.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The teachers and Sarah are on hand in case the kiddos need help picking out books.
Let's see how big our words are. You might have to help sister.
The bookmobile originally stopped at 7 locations, but was reduced down to 5 because kids weren't showing up. Sarah chose the locations based on bus routes and where a number of students get on or get off. This stop at the Links is the second stop for the bookmobile of the morning, and Sarah says they usually see 7 to 10 kids, depending on vacations and activities. Thanks to the Rogers Samaritan Center, they also hand out snack packs, complete with bottled water. The final stop of the day piggybacks with the free lunch program of Feed Fayetteville, held at the Dwelling Place Church on Dean Street, where families go for the meal Monday through Fridays at noon. The stop is near Washington Plaza Apartments and usually sees 25 to 30 kids from a variety of schools, such as Asbell, Leverett, and Washington, in addition to Holt and Holcomb. The hope is to extend the partnership with Feed Fayetteville next summer to reach even more places and students. There are just 2 more Mondays remaining in the Fayetteville Public Schools Bookmobile Summer Program, and we'll post a list of the stops and times at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. And this is Ozarks at Large.
The Kansas City jazz group The Sons of Brazil has been playing each and every week for over 20 years, and this weekend, they'll be making a stop in Northwest Arkansas. The sextet is led by trumpeter Stan Kessler, who was voted Outstanding Overall Musician by Jam Magazine. Robert Ginsberg, the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, caught up with Stan of The Sons of Brazil prior to the performance this weekend.
This Sunday, the Sons of Brazil will be performing in the second concert for the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. This group of Kansas City jazz musicians have been playing Brazilian music for 23 years. Last week, I spoke with Stanton Kessler, the leader and trumpeter and flugelhornist with this group, and asked him how a group of Kansas Cityans became so enamored with the music of South America.
The band started because of a confluence of several things. First of all, our love for Brazilian music, which started back in the late 50s. Danny Embry, our guitar player, had moved to L.A. in the late 70s and played with many famous people, Claire Fisher, for one. But then he toured with Sergio Mendes for 7 years. And really got, baptism under fire. There were 2 guitar players in that band. He would play electric, and then there'd be an acoustic guitar player. The acoustic guitar player was none other than Oscar Castro Neves, who in Brazilian music circles is the guy. You know, he's like amazing guitar player, composer, and producer. In fact, he produced that Joe Henderson album, Double Rainbow.
Right.
And also played on that. So Danny, got a lesson on every gig just watching Oscar play. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, our drummer, Doug Allwater, who we think was probably a Brazilian in a prior life, had been listening to the Brazilian Hour on NPR all through the 80s and 90s. Sergio Milchenko's famous show, and keeping up with what was going on, and really got into the Brazilian culture in every way, took Portuguese for a couple of years, and then went down to Rio on his first trip down there, first of many, in 1991, and came back with lots of recordings. Now, we had all heard Getz and Gilberto and Joe Beam in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, the bossa nova craze, the Stan Getz and all that. And we had kind of lost touch. I mean, not Doug, our drummer, but the rest of us had kind of lost touch with what was going on currently in Brazil. And so Doug brought back a lot of music and made these compilations for us. Some of the music was older and very historic, but a lot of it was more modern. And the modern stuff was just punchy and funky and just basically the way that they were playing and the way that they were recorded and mixed. These recordings were just really dynamic.
Music, no doubt. I
mean, well, it is, man, and the music sells itself, you know, if you play it right. So, which is what I'm leading up to. So, you know, Danny being back and Doug having made that trip, we were already playing quartet as a quartet, some just jazz gigs around town, and we just decided, you know, Doug brought back this music, and we flipped out, you know, head over heels, and thought, well, let's get band together and see if we can cop a few gigs, play this music and try to play it like Brazilians play it, you know, and try to play it in an authentic way and honor the music and honor the composers. And, you know, maybe we'll get a few gigs. Well, right away we got a weekly gig, you know, and then...
Was that at Jardine's?
No, that was the first one was at a place called The Tuba. And then that lasted a year, and then we ended up at the Boulevard Cafe, and that was the one. That was the golden gig every Tuesday night for 8.5 years. And in those days, in the 90s, the jazz scene wasn't what it is today. It was sparse, you know. So on Tuesday nights, we were basically the only game in town. And it became a place not only to come and hear music, but for sort of a vortex of artists, you know, and dancers and painters and you name it. And it just was like the place to be. So that was our outlet. And that was what really got the band going, was having that regular gig. So 23 years later, we're still playing regularly.
Received accolades from critics and fans, but there's another stamp of approval that's worth mentioning, and that's how the Brazilian community in Kansas City area has embraced this band.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about how that all came about? It must have been in the early
days.
Oh,
that's just such a funny story to me. We were playing at our first, you know, regular gig at the Tuba, which is basically a kind of a blues R&B bar, but we were playing, I think, on Monday nights. And Doug, the aforementioned Doug Allwater, our drummer, who speaks Portuguese and all that, and had contacted the Brazilian Club. And in those days, the Brazilian Club in Kansas City was really happening and pretty large. And there were a lot of students going to school here, going to college at the University of Missouri at Kansas City. From Brazil, so there was a community, and it was very organized and centralized. It's a little bit more fragmented now, but anyway. So Doug got a hold of them and said, we have this band, and we're playing down here, and we'd love to see you. Well, they didn't just come down. They sent a scout. One guy. And in fact, Samuel Toledo, who I haven't seen in 20 years, I think he moved to Florida. I don't even know where he is. Great guy. One of the younger guys. They sent him down to check us out because they weren't going to come down if it was going to be Samba Americano, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
They wanted to know that it was authentic, that it was going to, you know, be the real deal. And so he came down, he introduced himself, very nice guy. Then he left, and that was it, you know. Next week, like 30 people show up from the Brazilian club, all Brazilians. They show up en masse, and not only, this is the funny part, it's like they brought food. I mean, matriarch Elise, wonderful woman, she brings this crock pot in. I mean, full of feijoada, which is the Brazilian national dish. It's like a bean and meat stew, you know, with different kinds of beans and all kinds of different meat, and you pour it over rice, and it's the national dish. And she brings in this crock pot full of feijoada and starts feeding everyone in the club.
If you're gonna if you're gonna play Brazilian, you're gonna eat Brazilian.
Exactly. And it was just hilarious, you know. That was it. I mean, that was when we knew we were onto something because we had the, you know, the okay from the Brazilians, and that was the biggest compliment we could have had. So,
well, I hesitate to say this, Stan, because we're the same age, but at this point, you are approaching that elder statesman
category. Don't even say that word.
Well, it's true, man.
I know.
Yeah, you've been on the scene there for 35, 40 years.
Yeah, actually 44 years, I think.
Yeah, I don't want to think of us as elders, but
I know I've had that phrase thrown at me, and it makes me cringe, not because I'm in denial basically about how old I am. I like the terms. Here are the terms I like: jazz pillar. What's the other? Icon is good.
Pillar is a little stiff, I think.
Pillar is a little stiff. What was the one? Somebody told me something the other day that sounded good. I can't remember what it was. Anyway.
Well, yeah. Undoubtedly, Stan, you are revered and considered a regional treasure in terms of the music scene, and for good reason. And one of the big reasons is the work that you've done with the Sons of Brazil and keeping that group together and propelling it forward. What should the folks in Northwest Arkansas expect to hear when you perform at 21C?
Something that'll make you do a little chair dancing. There's something for everyone in this music. There really is. There are tunes that are really in your face and punchy, and there are tunes that are just, you know, some of the bossa novas will just take you away on a cloud. You know, it's just everything. It's all extremes, and everything in between is what we do. I think one of the reasons why we've been successful is we understand we're in the entertainment business. Yes, we love music and it's our joy, but if you don't entertain people, you know, what's the point? So I can truly say this band is entertaining. You will not be bored for one second.
That was KUAF's Robert Ginsberg, host of Shades of Jazz, speaking with the Sons of Brazil trumpeter and leader, Stan Kessler. The Sons of Brazil will perform at 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville this Sunday at 3 as part of the KUAF Summer Jazz Series. You can listen to Shades of Jazz Friday and Saturday evenings at 10 p.m. here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Karnatz. Still ahead, we'll meet the founder of Gingerber, a local craft company that is wooing the nation with its animal prints, tea towels, and pillows.
But first, tomorrow morning, the Bentonville Parks and Recreation Department will hold a topping out ceremony for the Bentonville Community Center. Tours of the center will be held at 11 tomorrow morning. The community center will be an 80,000 square foot facility that's scheduled to open in 2015 and serve people of all ages. Amenities will include an aquatic center featuring a zero depth entry family leisure pool, a 25 yard competitive pool. The center will also feature a fitness center, dance and aerobic studio, gymnasium, indoor running track, community rooms, arts and craft room, child watch area, senior activity area, lounge, and more. What else are they going to put in there? I don't know. In addition, the facility will be located in a 35-acre park, which will include multi-purpose sports fields and an amphitheater.
There you go.
That's the more. There you go.
More.
Right. Okay.
Tomorrow afternoon, the Fayetteville Public Library will host a screening of the documentary Growing Cities. The movie is about a trip across the country examining pockets of urban farming and how increasing the number of urban farms is helping spread neighborhood access to healthy food. The film will be shown at 12:30 tomorrow afternoon at the Fayetteville Public Library and will be followed by a panel discussion with local urban farmers. This event is free and in partnership with Feed Communities.
The first ever Tour de Cave bicycle tour is Saturday in Cave Springs. Two bike rides along the back roads of the Benton County town, led by staff members of the Illinois River Watershed Partnership. First ride is a faster 12-mile ride that begins at 9 a.m. Saturday morning. The other, more leisurely paced, a 4-mile ride beginning at 9:15 Saturday morning. Both rides will start at the IRWP Learning Center, which is on Main Street in downtown Cave Springs. Complimentary lunch will be served, and there will also be walking tours of the Watershed Sanctuary. For more information, you can call the IRWP at 220-8194.
Dolores Stamps, a Washington County Master Gardener, will speak on daylilies at the Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas's meeting this Saturday. Social time begins at 9:30 a.m. and the program begins at 10. This discussion will be located at the Student Center of the Northwest Technical Institute, located at 709 South Old Missouri Road in Springdale. This meeting is free and open to everyone. For more information, call 479-361-2198.
If you're still looking for something to do, we have suggestions.
Okay.
Because we're going to give some stuff away. We have four vouchers that can be turned into the Will Call office at Arvest Ballpark for the Northwest Arkansas Naturals.
For any game?
Any game, as long as it's not sold out. And there are only about 17 home games left. So, also four passes to any Malco Movie Area Theater.
Okay.
We also have four tickets to Seussical Jr., as put on by Trike Theater. This will take place at the Arend Arts Center. There are two shows, July 25th at 7 p.m., July 26th, the Saturday, at 2 p.m. Do I have that right, Friday and Saturday?
I think so.
25th and 26th. You would pick either the 7 p.m. July 25th or the 2 p.m. July 26th at Arend Arts Center. Seussical Jr.
Seussical the musical.
Right, and this is the adaptation for a younger cast, and it's going to be presented by Trike Theater. So you get four baseball, four movie, four live theater, and
a koozie.
The brand new KUAF koozie. It has the KUAF logo on one side and on the other side,
I heart NPR. You may have seen the signs, I don't know, around the interwebs, even on
right.
our website. I heart NPR.
All you have to do to get this whole package, it's one package for one winner, is send us an email
at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
And I like to get something else with the email. You know, last week I asked, what was your favorite rain song? So this week, a lot of the things we just talked about are taking place outside. So tell me your favorite place to be outside in the region.
Okay.
Where do you like to hang out when you're outside?
I'm trying to think. How about just my own backyard?
That'll work.
All right.
Okay.
Next time on NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia, we'll revisit some of our more crafty and sneaky games in our really hard edition.
The Great Gatsby Beetle Bailey?
Yes!
Yes. I don't get it.
Join me, Ophir Eisenberg, for NPR's guiltiest and most puzzling pleasure, Ask Me Another.
Listen to Ask Me Another, Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KUAF.
Each month, our locally made series shines a light on local artisans who create a wide array of products for residents in our listening area and beyond. Today, we visit the owner of an illustrative paper goods and homeware store that's helping customers add zest to their nest. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
During pregnancy, mothers-to-be often find themselves with a list of tasks to accomplish in preparation for their baby's arrival. They need to assemble a crib, purchase clothing, and perhaps even decorate a nursery. When Springdale resident Stacy Bloomfield became pregnant with her first daughter, she had trouble finding art she liked for her child's nursery. Because of her background in graphic design, Stacy's husband suggested she make her own art.
And at first I was a little nervous to make my own artwork, but you know, I just drew a couple of pieces and he said they were really good and he said you should try to sell them online. And so at the time it was a really big investment. I saved up for a $400 printer and I was thinking I will never recoup the cost for this, to sell enough prints to be able to pay for this printer. But we did it, and we opened a little online Etsy shop, and it kind of took off from there.
Today, that little suggestion has blossomed into a five-year-old company called Gingerbur. Based in Springdale, Stacy illustrates animals for art prints, pillows, tea towels, magnets, and tote bags that can be found online or in boutique shops across the U.S., as well as in other countries such as Belgium, France, Australia, Japan, and Italy. Her company's unique name originated in a college graphic design class. Students were instructed to create a brand about themselves, and Stacy sought inspiration by flipping through an old Latin dictionary.
At the time with typography, I was really into this font with lowercase g's because I'm kind of a nerd. And I saw the word gingerbread, it's old Latin for ginger. And I was like, well, that sounds kind of fun. So I went with it then. And then years later, when I started my company and was selling online on Etsy and I had to come up with a brand name, I was kind of just like, old fallback, let's just run a gingerbread. And then I realized later, hardly anyone could pronounce it. So now I have to explain that it's gingerbread. It's like ginger with an extra ib in the middle. But it's kind of just a fun word, and now I have it trademarked, you know. But it's nice. It doesn't pigeonhole us into any like particular industry, so we can kind of grow and expand into homewares and more children's wares without feeling like, you know, stuck.
Stacy began by creating art prints to sell, and she found that her bright graphic designs and use of patterns appealed to more than just parents-to-be. Requests to print her images on pillows or tea towels made Stacy realize that her audience may be bigger than she originally thought. Today, she has a line of pillows that are shaped like the brightly colored animals that are printed on them. She has a round pink pig and a keen-looking orange fox, among others. The reverse side of the pillows feature gingham and plaid pattern fabrics in varying colors. When deciding to expand her offerings, Stacy says it was important for her to create products she would genuinely want to use herself.
So when I was thinking about pillows, I was actually thinking about when I was a little girl and I had all these little craft kits with shaped pillows that were in the shape of whatever the illustration was. And I had them on my bed and I thought, you know, that is something I'm still thinking about as an adult. It was kind of fun and creative, a different approach to just a square pillow. So that's kind of why I made these shaped pillows. And then I found like adults were putting them on their couches too, and that people were decorating their nurseries with them. So I was like, that's a win. And then I really love to cook and be in the kitchen. And so when it came to like looking at tea towels, I was like, that's kind of a no-brainer. So we went with these really great oversized flour sack cotton tea towels, and they're made in the U.S. And then we did a huge oversized illustration on them. A lot of tea towels have a really small illustration in like the lower corner, so when it's folded over, you know, you can just see that bit of an illustration. But I like really nice big graphic illustrations, and I have a lot of college kids who shop from me, and they love to hang them on their dorm room walls because it's kind of a nice inexpensive way to get a fun like a bit of artwork on your wall. Because large artwork tends to be more expensive.
The Springdale-based company has hit a couple of milestones just within the past few months. In May, Gingerbur launched a greeting card line at the National Stationery Show in New York. And last week, Stacy launched a bedding line that was produced in partnership with the Land of Nod, Crate & Barrel's children's company.
I got really brave one day, and I just looked up the email address to the head of the company of the Land of Nod, and I sent her an email, and her name's Michelle, and I said, Michelle, it's been a dream of mine to work with your company, and I will pretty much do anything to work with you. Hope I didn't sound too desperate. But within like a week, she replied and said, yes, absolutely, we want to work with you. And I was just floored.
Stacy is working on a number of projects with the company, who is responsible for manufacturing products featuring her designs. As part of the licensing deal, Stacy receives a percentage of the sales. So far, the local artist has found the company to be very encouraging and receptive to her ideas.
The thing about the Land of Nod, which is different about a lot of companies and why I wanted to work with them in the first place, is they're really, really great at celebrating the artists they work with. Every product that they have is almost designed by another illustrator, and they have a little bio with every product to let you know that Gingerbread made this product or whoever else designed it made this product. And with a lot of companies, you know, they don't necessarily celebrate the artists they work with. So the Land of Nod is an amazing company for partnering with illustrators.
If Gingerbread owner Stacy Bloomfield had her way, she says she would be creating several other products. However, production is one of the hardest parts of her small business. All of Stacy's products are made in the U.S. Her pillows, for example, are hand-sewn in Arkansas by herself as well as by a couple of seamstresses. She's looking for another one, by the way. When sourcing materials, Stacy says it's sometimes difficult to find U.S. manufacturers who can produce the smaller quantities she needs for the right price point. When things are made in America, they tend to cost a little more, she says, because you have to think about a living wage for the person making it. Production can be cheaper overseas, and Stacy actually had a conflict with a South Korean company a few years ago. At that time, it was brought to her attention that the company had taken one of her designs, as well as the designs of other artists, and was mass-producing them at a fraction of the cost that she could.
So every sale that they had was a sale money that wasn't going in my pocket, and I'm the artist who created this product, and, you know, it hurts your brand, and it hurts your feelings a little bit, because it's very personal whenever you're a small artist working and making everything yourself. So in terms of trying to keep it local and make it here, I mean, you have visibility on who's making it. You have a little bit of control over where it's going. And, you know, that's important to me.
Stacy says instances like this can be difficult to battle in court because overseas copyright laws aren't the same as they are here in the States. The Springdale illustrator addressed this challenge through the use of a social media campaign. Though she never received any monetary restitution, the head of the company issued an apology to the artists and pulled the products from the production line. Stacy is working with a lawyer now to copyright her images in case she finds herself in a similar situation in the future. For now, Stacy is all about looking forward. She wants to work in the downtown Springdale area and has an eye on a property for the company's headquarters. She's also considering expanding Gingerbread's stationery line to include products like journals and gift tags. Reflecting on the first 5 years of her company, Stacy says she feels fortunate to have lucked into a career that she enjoys so much.
And I think, you know, a lot of people don't have that happen. I mean, I've known from a really young age that art is what I've wanted to do. So many people don't get to do what they love to do when they're children. And I think it's kind of amazing that, you know, I've had kind of that passion since I was little, and it's kind of exploded now. And in terms of growth, I feel really blessed. I feel like I've met the right people who've really helped me kind of take it to the next level. There's been a lot of encouragement from my family. My family, that's probably, I can't not say enough about them, especially locally, my husband's family's here, and they've been real cheerleaders for me and very helpful. And I do have two children with a third on the way, and so it's hard to balance it all out with the kids. But, you know, whenever you have friends and family kind of in your corner, it makes a huge difference.
Locally, you can find Gingerbread products at Shindig Papery and at both locations of the Mustache Goods and Wares. For more information or to place an order online, visit Gingerbread, that's GINGIBER.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It is Thursday, July 17th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Here we are to talk about the theater season at Northwest Arkansas Community College.
The theater season at Northwest Arkansas Community College.
Yes. You know, they have one.
Yes, I do.
Which
yes,
is
I
one
do.
Of the things that Ashley Edwards, who's the department coordinator, would love for people to know, that they have a theater season. They're doing some cool, interesting things this year. On October 15th, they're doing an evening of devised theater.
What exactly is devised theater?
I haven't got the foggiest idea. We're going to find out.
Okay.
They're doing the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged in November.
A fun show.
They're doing a play in a day high school competition in November. Those are fun. Then they're doing a 10-minute play festival in March, which will be plays that will be student written. And they will be chosen in December for the March performance. So they'll have a lot of time to put those together. And then in April, they'll be doing Water by the Spoonful, which is the 2012 Pulitzer Prize winner and should be a fascinating show. It's about a Puerto Rican veteran of the Iraq War who faces personal demons when he returns to the United States.
Wow.
We did not talk about devised theater because I want something to write about when it comes time for the show.
Okay.
But Ashley's great goal is to reach out and do theater that brings in the community. And so that is what will be going on this year. They do not sell season tickets. Individual tickets are $6 for students, $8 for the public. And we will be following the season in What's Up.
Sounds good.
All right.
Becca Martin-Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. We've got some new live music from Rick Estrin and the Nightcats. Also, Dickie Betts playing with John Lee Hooker, Janova Magnus, the Don Ray Band, Jesse D, the Cashbox Kings, and more. Again, that's the Generic Blue Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Fort Smith, and Pedro.
Pedro?
Pedro. It is in between, it's about halfway in between Tawnytown and Siloam Springs, just right off of Highway 412.
Is there a sign?
I can't recall ever seeing a sign, but it's on the map.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So,
if it's on the map, it's official. I agree. I want to say a special thanks to Richard Hudson. He is retiring as Vice Chancellor for Government and Community Relations at the University of Arkansas. He's also been the organizer for the Northwest Arkansas Political Animals Group since the late 90s. This morning was his last political animals meeting to preside over. John Threet is taking over in that regard. The two candidates for Attorney General for Arkansas were there. But thanks. I know that everyone who's attended a political animals meeting over the last 18 or 19 years, thanks, Richard, for his work in that endeavor.
And that's a group that meets once a month.
Well, it meets whenever.
Okay.
Whenever the schedule allows for a speaker. And it's not closed or anything. I mean, today there were, I don't know, hundreds of people.
To bid him farewell.
Well, and to listen to the candidates mm-hmm. who are running for Attorney General.
Okay.
Richard always made the focus on the speaker. But he organized them for years, and we appreciate that.
All right. Another thing you wanted to mention, the Firefly Fling at the Botanical Gardens of the Ozarks.
It's Saturday night from 6 until 10. There is construction on 265 just north of the Botanical Gardens, but the BGO is still accessible from the south. Just go way of 71 Business and Zion Road to 265, then north to their parking meadow. It's a garden, so they don't have just a parking lot. They have a parking meadow.
Right.
Yeah. It is a fun time.
Okay.
Hula hoops included.
I've never been, but I like hula hoops.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You'll be back tomorrow with Antoinette Grajeda.
That's the plan, yes.
Okay. I know that I'll have some music on from the jazz duo Handmade Moments.
Yes, that's right.
We'll be on tomorrow.
All right.
Until then, we'll end with some music from the Velcro Pygmies. Interesting name. This is their song, Don't Call It Love. They will be playing at the Rib Room in Fort Smith tomorrow and Saturday evening. She got the style. I'm gonna take her on.